shorts and bag.
That's a nasty looking finger, lady.
You got the bait?
What? No.
Hey, I got your fertilizer.
We made you.
Welcome back, interweb friends. This is Stop the Movie, I Want to Get Out. Hollywood makes bad movies. We make fun of them when we're not on hiatus. We are back. I feel like I've said this the past couple. Sorry, like, life has been crazy. I'm switching jobs. Cody just bought a new house. There's all kinds of stuff going on. So we're trying to lock it down, but appreciate the episodes you get.
Thanks for sticking with us.
Yeah, we will get on track. But
things are so crazy. Jack isn't even here today.
I know. We don't. I mean,
he's off somewhere in Rome.
You know, things are. As Nick made the joke
check
last night,
Coliseum.
He might be on the colony. Yeah. Our movie this week, 1997's Double Team, and I do feel like we were just talking about off camera. I have to clarify what year this movie came out, because it came out in 97, but it screams earlier
in the 90s.
It is the
most 1994-esque movie I've ever seen.
Yes. This movie, if I had seen this in 1997, I would have said, like, ooh, this feels outdated. Like, it doesn't. It's everything about it.
Right.
Van Damme was on the decline at this point. A movie starring Dennis Rodman seemed shaky. Mickey Rourke was not in a good place in 1997, as I think this movie kind of illustrates.
Yeah, I think he was just getting over the plastic surgeries. You can easily tell.
Yeah. And this was kind of in the height of that era where, and essentially it was all Jean-Claude Van Damme, where they were bringing over the great Hong Kong action directors to the U.S., which, you know, was somewhat successful in Van Damme's Hard Target. I'm a Hard Target fan. It's crazy, but it works. None of the other experiments Van Damme did with Hong Kong directors worked out well. Maximum Risk, directed by Ringo Lam. And Ringo Lam is a great director, but Maximum Risk is unwatchable.
I don't watch many Van Damme movies.
This is an
interesting experience for me.
Not a connoisseur of that window from, like, basically it was 1992 to about 1995 when Van Damme was a very marketable movie star, and then it fell apart.
Speaking of window, I like in this movie how every single pane of glass gets broken.
Oh, every...
Like, Van Damme has a vendetta against glass.
It's almost like everyone does. I've never seen so many people go through windows.
Yeah.
I mean, every...
There was a scene later, we'll get to it, but I was laughing so hard when he just, like, jumps through windows for no reason.
Oh, yeah. It's like when everyone signed on to this movie, they were like, just so you know, you will be going through a window. And it was like a form they were handing people.
We've got surplus panes of glass.
Yeah. Everyone, the term sugar glass was known by everyone on the set. They're like, yep, okay.
This is also that time in the 90s where, like, basketball stars were, like, movie stars too.
You know what? And this is
the Space Jam of Dennis Rodman's career.
Yes. Well, and we've had a couple of these where Kazam. That's true. That's true. Well, we've had a couple of these where in the 90s you would take someone who was a big name, and it was like a heat check thing, like, oh, let's just put them in a movie and see if that movie works, which this still kind of happens to this day. But in the 90s, they'd be like, no, let's have them star in a movie, you know, fair game, Cindy Crawford.
To Dennis Rodman's defense, I mean, I felt he held his own compared to Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Like I said earlier, I expected him to be the worst part of this movie, and he was not.
He's not.
Especially when he's talking to Van Damme, it's like, those exchanges they have where they're, like, jibing each other, whatever. It's like, he's so much better than
Van Damme is.
Yeah, I mean, he kind of, for a non-actor, he kind of is okay.
Right.
I mean, like, you're grading on a curve, but
he could have used a couple more acting classes, but...
Yeah. He's also really hurt because, and this is a joke I'm going to make all the way through, I have never seen a movie with more ADR than this movie. I mean, and I mean, like, ADR that was clearly, like, written and recorded after the movie was shot. Whole jokes, setup, like, delivery, and punchline that are in ADR.
There's a scene where, like, it's like a wide shot, and Dennis Rodman is like saying something, some kind of joke, and his mouth isn't even moving. Like,
oh yeah,
they just hope you don't notice because he's like farther away.
The way the audio was recorded for this, kills any comic timing.
Bro, yeah.
Like, I don't know that this would have been good, but even if you had good comedic performers, just the delivery of this is deadly for all of the attempts at humor.
Well, one other thing about Dennis Rodman I want to say quick is they keep like shoehorning in like basketball jokes. And it's like, it doesn't make sense for the character. It's only because Dennis Rodman's a basketball
player. It's only for the audience. And they do not stop. The puns, like if anything, the puns escalate as the movie goes on. You're like, oh, like towards the end, I'm groaning audibly and just being like, please, like don't make this poor guy do another basketball related pun. All right, so let's start in on this. This movie, I
knew I was in for.
Actually, have we said the name of the movie yet?
I think Double Team.
I keep thinking Double Down for some reason. I actually searched Double Down in Crackle, and it was like it's not here. And then I looked at the text, and it's like, oh, Double Team.
What's the Dolph Lundgren one about either, oh god, I kept confusing this Rocky with IV? Universal Soldiers.
You're talking about Rocky IV.
Rocky IV. So the movie, this I refused to go to Wikipedia until after I had seen the movie because I was so confused right off the top. Mm-hmm. I didn't understand what was going on. Jean-Claude Van Damme is a secret agent. You really kind of find that out later on. They don't really let you know that off the top, but he's a secret agent who is supposed to steal a truck full of plutonium, but Jean-Claude Van Damme just seems to find a truck full of plutonium.
No one's guarding it. It looks like they just painted it or something. Like he's pulling tape and tarps off it.
Yeah, like he just kind of like someone said, like, walk into a hangar. It felt like a Grand Theft Auto mission where they're like, oh, just walk into this hangar and there's a truck of plutonium waiting for you. Mm-hmm. And then once you start it, you trigger a bunch of guys to start chasing you like crazy.
This scene must have been like cut in half or so. It feels like you're dropped in the middle of it. And then they have like, not narration, but someone like explaining it over it to somebody else.
Oh, the ADR
That must have been like the first half of the scene.
Yes. There had to be a different version of this because
the guy's just like, he has to get this truck to somewhere and then his resignation is final.
I wrote this line down. It's so in ADR, a guy goes, he has 14 hours to make it to the border. If he does, his resignation is final. I'm like, what? What border? Right. He's resigning?
Yeah, border.
So we just met this guy?
Right.
And we have no context for even who he is.
They pulled him in for one last job.
Yeah.
Otherwise, he wouldn't get all that vacation time he invested.
That's right.
And then there's like one quick chase scene.
It really is a quick chase scene of a slow-moving vehicle.
Right. He outruns the bad guys by just getting on the other side of a moving train, and then they give up.
He only semi-successfully jumps a train with what looks basically like a dump truck.
Right. Yeah, he kind of... It felt, even as they were writing it, they were like, we can't tell people he jumped this train, so we're just going to make it seem like he jumped it a couple feet, you know?
Just barely made it.
Just kind of made it.
But then, so then it's over, the chase is over, but it's like, if he's got 14 hours, what happens the other... Does no one chase him for the next 13 and
I didn't understand that either. Like, they introduced a ticking clock, and then immediately we're just like, oh, no, I guess that doesn't matter.
It was one of those small European countries. That was the whole... entirety of their army. Cop cars that were chasing them.
Because I started thinking about that too. I'm like, oh, 14 hours, what's going to happen next? Cut to a graphic on the screen 3 years later. I'm like, okay, I guess 14 hours is out of the question now.
This is over.
I'm like, okay. And a character who I described as like poor man's Troy McClure shows up trying to recruit.
That ADR was bad.
You might remember me from such secret agent missions. Raid on Belgrade and invasion of Tripoli. Yeah.
Did anyone feel that? Like that somebody said to him, like, can you do this in a more Phil Hartman-esque way?
It was really ridiculous.
Yeah.
You're a hunter, Jack. You can't give it up.
And Jean-Claude Van Damme is doing... This is the worst of the Jean-Claude Van Damme. Like, he's pretty wooden to begin with.
You remind me a lot of Tommy Wiseau in this, in this movie.
Yes.
Ooh, yeah.
He seemed to aggressively refuse to react to things that people were saying to him or were happening around him. you know, it was, it seems like instead of getting room tone, they just sort of got a shot of Van Damme and they were like, okay, we'll just use that cutaway for whatever's happening, you know.
Jean-Claude looked vaguely confused. Good job. Good job.
And so at one point, like, knockoff Phil Hartman says to Van Damme, he's like, Stavros is alive and we want him alive. Who?
Like, they mention him briefly in the first scene. Like, he was stealing this stuff from Stavros or something.
I started kind of laughing out loud at that point because it's like, Stavros, really? You want to make people think of Bond?
Every time I was like,
there's no way you're going to be able to even meet, you know, the worst Bond movie in terms of quality.
I thought about Bond later on too during the Q scene.
This reminded me. Actually, this did.
You know what? It's kind of mirrors the. It's like they were trying to create a new Bond series.
This
is a remake of Thunderball.
Triple team. Quadruple team. Just a whole series of.
Yeah. Three-peat. Oh, I bet if there was a sequel, I bet it was going to be three-peat. When we make fun of our next Bond movie, I should think of this because, like, you're right. Even the worst Bond movie is more coherent than this jumbled mess is. Even an ancient Roger Moore.
He at least has more charisma than Jean-Claude.
I mean, this is terrible. I mean, just bad choices all around.
We should mention too in this scene before the guy comes and like convinces him to come back. He's Van Damme is just interacting with his wife, and you find out she's pregnant. Which comes back later.
It does come back. That's true.
It's a major plot point.
So now we cut to Rome.
Chekhov's baby.
I kept wondering how that was going to come back in, and it came back in the most weird and awkward way.
Yeah, I still don't understand what's happening.
So we go to Rome, and the knockoff Phil Hartman guy gets into a car. And it turns out Mickey Rourke is in the back seat. And I don't know, Mickey Rourke just kind of is like, yeah, good job getting Jack Quinn back in the game or something.
He's like basically like, yeah, you suck, but you did one good thing in getting him back. I don't know why he wants him back in the game, but
I do not understand.
But he's like, you had him. Yeah. And he's like,
because they had 90 more minutes to fill, Cody. Come on. Come on.
It was just a weird setup. And then he's like, all right, I gotta go. And he's like, I left you a present. And he like gets out, and there's a bomb in the backseat of the.
And Phil Hartman, not Phil Hartman, sees the bomb, and then like I was unclear on what happened, on why he couldn't get out of the car because he seems locked. To have a lot of time, and
I took it to be that it was locked, so he tries to unlock. He just can't get the car unlocked. Yeah. Can't get out, and when he does open, finally. Engage the
it's too late
the release like I assume that just triggered the bomb or
no because it had a countdown on it
did he
get it unlocked. I don't remember,
but also it was his car. Like how was he locked into his own just car
we're gonna say a lot it was poorly thought out and plotted.
Well, and this is like the most awkward like car blowing up bomb scene ever. It's like kind of it's like slow motion strobe shot and like the flames come up behind him and then you see the car like lift up. Like, the car, he's just kind of lift up, and it's like that fire is like way behind him. And
speaking of the strobe effect, there, they did that
a lot,
and there was no real, like, just randomly,
the scene at the carnival coming up was ridiculous.
Yeah.
It was like basically House of the Dead.
Yeah. The scene at the carnival, my eyes sent a memo to my head to say, just please stop watching for a minute because the strobing effect was causing problems for me.
Yeah.
So now and this is for a movie that kind of wants to be a buddy, not buddy cop, buddy agent movie. Mm-hmm. I guess we do meet Dennis Rodman. He is
I couldn't figure out if this movie was supposed to take place like now or if it was like in the future, like one of those like weird futures, like Johnny Mnemonic or whatever.
Up until a little later when the colony gets introduced. I just assumed, like, okay, present day. And then the colony shows up, and I'm like, you have no idea what's going on here.
I totally agree with Nick. I was like, oh, yeah, well, maybe we're in the future. But then the technology they're using is so 1997. Right.
Cars and stuff are like,
in the car, and like
80s cars.
I just assumed, that crazy Europe.
Yeah, I was like, I think we are present day. I'm like, I don't know. I don't know if this movie knows where it wants to be happening.
To Antwerp or wherever is where Dennis Rodman is, and it's like this weird, like, steampunky kind of
this future weird kind of
city.
Yeah, that's true. They make Antwerp seem very futuristic.
Yeah, in like that weird 90s way.
Yeah, in that weird 90s way that's like they had sets left over from the first Blade movie and they like, just Mario grabbed them. Yeah. So they meet, and this is where we start getting like joke delivery, and I can't,
so bad,
I can't, I don't, we're not gonna be able to do justice for Jean-Claude Van Damme joke delivery, because it's, you know.
What was the one string? It was like, who does your hair?
Yep.
Sigmund or Freud? And he's like.
Or Siegfried or Roy.
Siegfried, yeah.
But you just delivered it with better timing. It's delivered more like, who does your hair? Siegfried or Roy.
Like, and then Dennis Brown was like, what? The last guy who made fun of my hair is still pulling his head out of his ass, and he's like, I don't want to hear about your sex life.
They're like, all like that. It felt a little like video games from kind of like the early 2000s when sometimes the voice acting was, or like someone was speaking in a language that they shouldn't have been, and it never came out quite right. Rodman is delivering jokes, but they're not. I mean, the editing and the pacing on this is brutal too. You know, he just all of Rodman's jokes, and he's not, again, not the worst thing in this movie, but they all felt like he was doing like a table read, not like an actual joke delivery.
Right. So Van Damme basically comes here because this guy is like an arms dealer or something.
He's kind of like a Q. But he only sells to the good guys.
Now. He used to sell to the bad guys.
Right.
But he's kind of like a Q for like what I was saying earlier, for the, because he's got like these not only guns and stuff, but like
explosive.
Like explosive shape, like, you know, a button or something or a pin. And
just crazy devices.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or like the parachute bubble thing.
Yeah.
So he's got these things that he invents, and Van Damme has come to get some guns and stuff from for his mission.
Because I feel like that was kind of the pitch at one point for this movie was, what if we made a James Bond movie where Bond and Q were a buddy cop team? And
edgy 90s James Bond.
Yes, a kung fu James Bond, and Dennis Rodman will be the Q, and like, I just imagine like some studio executive being like, oh, it's so hip, you know? And
yeah.
Meanwhile, everyone at home being like, this is not hip.
Yeah.
But, so then I think we jump right to the amusement park scene, right?
Yeah, he gets the guns and stuff, and then it goes to, they're like set up at the little carnival or amusement park, whatever it is.
He meets the rest of the Delta team.
Yes.
It's a Delta team. We've got a Delta team waiting for you. Yeah. Here's Delta One.
And there's a weird setup here where Jean,
this is how crazy this movie is. It's like when he gives the woman like the sniper rifle,
he
slams like the gun case like on the table and then like kung fu kicks it across the table to her.
Yeah. And he's like, do you know what this is? And she's like, yep, pretty familiar with it. It's a sniper rifle.
How to use it?
He's like, or he said something weird, like he didn't say like, who's my sniper? He used some other.
I think he's like, who's my.
Who's my dead shot or something?
Who's my dead? Yeah, something
like that. And she's like, that's me. And he's like, all right, do you know what this is? And she puts it together and he's like, okay, it shoots tranquilizer darts, non-lethal. And I'm like, okay, I'm really intrigued to see how this is going to come back in. Does not come back in.
Well, then they specified one will knock out a man, two will kill him, three will kill a rhino. Yeah. I'm like, wait a second.
What about
that's
a
big jump from killing a man to killing a rhino. Like that's
that third one really.
Like, what do you?
Maybe instead of a tiger, there's supposed to be a rhino in this movie, and they just never changed the line.
I then went the entire film thinking like that dart is going to come back into this. It literally never comes.
That woman
back.
Never even gets a shot off.
No, she never shoots anybody. No. Yeah.
The movie does away with Chekhov's gun and.
Yeah.
So that we can get Chekhov's baby instead.
That's right. Introduce a baby somebody's got to hide in a hole in the wall.
You can have a baby or a gun in the first act that comes back in the third, but that's it.
That's right.
And they couldn't have picked like a more ridiculous place to try to take this guy. Like, it's a carnival. There's tons of people.
Or a more terrible plan. So, like, he pulls up in a car where they're all like, and immediately there's all this ADR line of like, Starvos is here, Starvos is here. Like, everyone's like, Starvos is walking in. And everyone's freaking out, and apparently no one has any interest in the car he came in. So at some point, Jean-Claude Van Damme's like, hey, that's not him.
he's a lefty.
He's left-handed.
Yeah. And so
he's like paid with his right hand or something.
It then becomes apparent that they didn't leave any agents with the car he drove in on. And Sean Connery Van Damme's like, ah, the driver, that's Star Wars. And I'm like, ooh, how's this going to pay off? Oh, don't worry. I found him. He's right there.
Standing in the middle of the street.
What was the point? What was the point of that? And Starvos is there with his kid. This is even weirder.
Was it his kid or no?
Well,
I think it was. Yes. But yeah. It was like some woman.
A woman comes up to him.
Hiding the kid underneath her raincoat.
Under her raincoat. And the kid's not young.
Yeah.
I mean, this is
like a six-year-old kid. Yeah, I think they say he was six.
He was six. Yeah. Like, he's a tall kid. Yeah. Like, and when she lifts the raincoat to bring this kid out, it's like a Cirque du Soleil moment. Like, what's happening?
They were at a circus or a fair. Yeah. I don't know, some kind of carnival. Yeah.
Yeah. So now, and so the.
So, okay, my question is.
Oh, if your question is about what happens next, well, I have no answers for you.
Before what happens next, is Stavros like buddies with the tiger? Like, do they have a connection already? Because this tiger tips him off to a sniper on the roof.
That was.
And then the tiger comes back.
Turns out Siegfried and Roy did his hair.
Yeah. The tiger seems to be doing the best acting in this film. And at times, the tiger clearly conveys its background and motivations better than other human actors do.
Yeah, so he's like kneeling in front of this tiger cage with the kid. He's like hugging the kid. And then he looks over the tiger, and the tiger gives him a suspicious look, and then like looks over his shoulder. The tiger looks over his shoulder at the sniper like on the roof, and then that's when Mickey Rourke sees the sniper on the roof.
Which, by the way, the sniper was making no attempt to hide. Like, she's basically just like standing there, like pointing a gun
on top of like the haunted house or something.
Yeah. I think because Jean-Claude Van Damme sees the kid. And well, I've got a kid on the way. Well, no, don't shoot him. I don't know. You're a very bad agent, John.
Yeah,
you were awful at your job.
And they're not even shooting him with a bullet. They're going to shoot him with a tranquilizer. Yeah. I'm like, what's the problem?
Right.
Like, this didn't make any sense.
Yeah, that was very confusing.
One knocks out a man. Two kills a man. Three kills a rhino. Four kills a child.
That's right.
You figure out that math.
So what exactly happens at this point?
Stavros sees the sniper on the roof and shoots her.
Yeah. With a
handgun. Hand yeah. Like shoots her like through the scope, I think.
She like he Robin Hoods it pretty much. He basically splits her scope with his handgun bullet.
And then all hell breaks loose. And like at this point I was confused as to who was with who.
Because first of many times be an issue in this film.
There's like carnies like pulling guns out and shooting.
It turned into Batman and Robin for a second there. Yeah. Like I thought it was a themed crime gang.
Yeah,
but I don't know who were the carnies with the Delta team, because some people were with Stavros because they're all shooting each other. And then the scene gets crazy because like we were saying earlier, there's a lot of like the strobe stuff, and then there's like freeze frame stuff.
Yeah,
it's very oddly edited.
It's very confused, but the kid.
Well, okay, so at one point in the fight, like, the mother gets shot in the back, and she's holding the kid.
Did the mother... I can't believe I'm going to say this. Did the mother get shot, or did she get killed by the tiger? Because one point the tiger attacked... I have my notes, I'm like, was that mom just killed by the tiger?
No, because then Stavros wouldn't have blamed Jack Quinn for it.
Okay.
Because I'm pretty sure
she was standing by the tiger cage when that happened.
They were still standing. Because the tiger, I think, almost gets shot a couple times.
Okay.
But she gets shot in the back and then, like, falls, like, on the child. And then Mickey Rourke, like, pulls her off of the kid. And I thought the kid was fine.
Yeah.
But,
And then, like, because there's no, like, blood on the kid or anything. And then, like, the next time they show the kid, he's bloody and dead.
Yeah. Like, the kid,
I don't know if he got shot, like, when the mother got shot, like it went through both of them or something, or if like he got shot later on in the fight, but all of a sudden like the kid is, he's like pulling like something out of the kid's dead, cold, dead hand. It was like, I guess the kid's dead.
Here's what I can tell you. I'll tell you, I did get to see Jean-Claude Van Damme do a vaudeville routine on a bunch of Coca-Cola cans.
Oh my God. I want to mention that. The Coca-Cola product place in this movie, it's ridiculous.
I would later like to on say, in the movie, it's at even this more. Point in my notes, I say, this is the craziest product placement I've ever seen.
Nope.
I
scratched that out an hour later.
Immediately.
At that point, your life it was.
Yeah, at that point, things changed very quickly.
Yeah, because they get the close-ups of the Coke cans. He's like slipping on them and falls off the thing. And
yeah.
And then basically...
And by the way, if you're Coke, wouldn't you be like, I don't know if this is really the product placement we're looking for of Jean-Claude Van Damme? Whoa. Like sliding
they,
on cans.
They get redeemed later because they saved their lives.
That's true. So. That's true.
But after they caused the death of a child.
That's true. Yeah.
And also, it's worth noting, if you watch the shots as like Jean-Claude Van Damme's running around this amusement park, tons of other... There's a crazy gunfight. There's has to be... A dozen people shooting machine guns at each other. Other people are just riding rides and walking around enjoying themselves.
One of my favorite parts, one of my favorite scenes is like, or parts of the scene was when there's like a pendulum ride or something. And like,
did you look at the faces of the people on the ride?
Because like, Stavros is like hanging off the ride, like shooting at Quinn, and so it's like, and the people on the ride are just like, what the fuck's going on?
Totally deadpan. I laughed about that. I actually had to pause the movie and laugh for 30 seconds to myself in my basement. They look so bored.
Yeah.
As it must have been like take 30.
Right.
And the people, those extras, didn't have anything left in the tank.
Well, and then there's a weird editing, another weird editing thing here because like, Van Damme like jumps over a woman or something and she screams, and then like it cuts to Stavros on this ride and it's like a woman screams and it's the same exact scream.
Yeah.
Like they couldn't have grabbed a scream from somewhere else or had someone scream for a second.
Yeah. Yeah.
They just like use that scream twice in like a second and a half.
It was really weird. And somehow they transitioned from the amusement park to... Is it a hospital?
Yeah.
Or is this... Okay, so this is where they go into the Scooby-Doo hospital, basically. I mean, if this...
With nobody in it, except for babies all alone.
Yeah, I mean, this hospital was terrifying.
Yeah.
We just momentarily go into this, like, your classic action movie cliche, two people in a dark, poorly lit environment trying to shoot slash punch each other.
this is where I laugh, because at one point, it's like... there's glass, like, again, there's breaking glass everywhere, like every window, like Mickey Rourke's throwing things through or whatever. And at one point, like, Van Damme's like hiding from him, and Stavros is like two rooms away, and Van Damme jumps through a window.
Yes.
Into the room between them, like grabs a chair and then like whips the chair through the door and then jumps through another window and tackles Stavros.
It
was like the most like conspicuous way he could have like snuck up on him.
Yeah, it couldn't have been more. And it also involved what my friends and I growing up used to refer to as the Super Nintendo Star Wars jump, where you could jump when you are jumping. What you were accelerating off of is unclear, but you could jump when you were already jump, in
yeah.
the air.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He's just like going headfirst through these windows. No cuts or anything on me.
Yeah, fine. Everything's fine. Yeah.
Then they're just fighting. They fight and they end up like in a maternity ward or like a room full of like newborn babies. And like Stavros is using them to like hit Van Damme with like one of the like the little carts with a baby in it. This was like the most ridiculous
scene. It was really goofy.
Yeah.
And Van Damme, there's like intentional shots of like Van Damme being like, whoa, save that baby.
Yeah.
You know?
But then there's a shot which made me laugh. It's like, yeah, so then he. Like, Stavros, like, rolls another baby cart at him to, like, distract him while he runs away. And then, like, throws a grenade into the, like, right next to the baby.
Yes.
Yep. So Van Damme has to, like, grab the grenade and, like, throw in the elevator with the security guard who's knocked out or whatever, dead.
Yeah.
And, like, run away from the explosion with the baby.
With the baby.
And in the cart. It was, oh, my God.
So, and he takes, the way they portray, I mean, this was a heck of a grenade. I guess it was, a nitroglycerin grenade? Or I don't, you know, it even though Van Damme seems reasonably far away from it, he is...
Well, these grenades in this movie, there's a scene later on where they throw a grenade into a swimming pool and the pool bursts into flames.
Nothing will top the mine at the end of the movie.
That's true. Yeah, mines are really... So Van Damme takes a bunch of the blast and then...
He's knocked out.
We then go to cut to... A totally different movie.
Yes.
A movie set on an island.
Some of this was interesting.
It was a mid-90s attempt at The Prisoner.
Oh, yes. Yeah, you know whoever...
Which, the concept by itself could have been a really good, fun, interesting movie. Got stuck in the middle of this one.
It did. And it, like, went nowhere. I was like... Because this colony stuff was kind of interesting. I was interested in seeing like where it could go, and then it just didn't go anywhere.
So to give, I think we almost have to give a summary of the colony, so he's then wakes up on an island.
I just realized too that I'll wait to it. Go ahead.
Well, it's an island full of secret agents who are believed to be dead. right. who now work as consultants for
their think tank.
For someone?
Think tank for someone that is never explained.
Yeah.
And it's never explained if the people making them do this are good guys, bad guys, medium guys. I think they're
medium guys. Because there's one guy that he comes up upon. It's explained to him that like all these agents who have been quote unquote killed were actually not killed and were brought to this colony. And one of the guys is like...
One of the guys is Belloc from Raiders of the Lost Ark, which I got super excited when he came into the movie.
Quick side note. I spent the entire movie trying to remember where I knew him from. So I looked up on IMDb later on and I saw, it's Belloc. But the IMDb picture for him is from Double Team.
Oh, God.
It's him like sitting in the chair. Oh, I'm like, he's Belloc. And then they've used a picture of
Double Team. That's just mean. That's cruel.
So one of the guys is like... comes out of the pool or whatever and he's like, oh, Jack Quinn. And Jack's like, oh, I killed you and wherever. And he's like, we're fine. And then he like punches him.
Yeah.
He like starts trying to fight Jack Quinn. So like, okay, this is going to go somewhere. This guy's going to... Was he the guy? I don't know.
Well, we're going to get back. But this does happen.
I thought that was going to come back. Did it come back? Was that the guy in the scuba gear
later
on?
It's so compressed. I think it is. But the movie's so compressed. It's like Jack Quinn doesn't even know where he is.
Right.
And they're like, oh, we're all secret agents. People thought we're dead. Now we work in a think tank. And Van Damme's like, oh, okay. And then a guy's like, oh, Jack Quinn. And by the way, it's the first of many times in the movie where Van Damme is... unfazed by something that should be very concerning to him.
Right. Yeah.
He is just, in fact, it's a trend in this whole movie of people are just completely unfazed by things that should be wildly shocking to them at the very least.
Yeah. So it's his first day on the job, first day there. They just explain this to him. They're like, okay, now sit down in the think tank and you're going to go to work.
Sit down in the think tank. And there's another weird kind of thing is clearly going to be a callback where they all sit in these chairs and they literally say to him, they go, you just have to do one thing. You have to put your hand in the scanner. And then some stuff happens. They're seeing like video feeds of like a terrorist incident. And then someone's like, hey, who's off? Hey, Jack Quinn. Make sure you have your hand on your scanner. Cut to insert shot of like, oh, Van Damme, like, oh, putting his hand on the scanner. We never see those scanners again.
This whole sequence, so much of it is just, why? Yeah.
And then Belloc explains to Jack Quinn that there are lasers in the water off of the shore of the colony.
When he said underwater lasers, I laughed out loud.
I did too. Well, at first he said underwater lasers, and I'm like, ah, that's funny. And then I'm like, then they show you the lasers. Underwater. Then I really laughed. I'm like, wow, that's interesting.
Yeah. It's like he can't escape because there's underwater lasers, and they destroy anything they touch.
Mixed in before we go on to more about those lasers, there's a totally random scene where Jean-Claude Van Damme's wife is called by an art gallery in Rome because they want to show her
sculpture.
Sculpture. Because at this point, I'm like, I didn't even know she was an artist.
They mentioned it briefly early on.
Did they?
The immortal line, Karen, you're... cow got in my way.
Oh, that's right.
That's right.
I didn't. Okay. But it was like...
Same thing happened to me walking into Cody's today. His cow got in my way.
Cow. So then we cut back to the colony and we find out the lasers go off for food delivery / trash pickup. I just thought of this. Is it possible that the entire TV show Lost is a ripoff of Double Team?
Possible.
Maybe. There seem to be elements of Lost that were in this movie.
So they do this thing where they make everyone go back to their cottages and like put their thumbs on their scanners so that they know where everybody is so that they can turn the lasers off.
Some sort of cargo drop.
Yeah. So this comes back later on because this is the only time they turn the lasers off.
Right.
So you have to be sitting in your room with your thumb on the scanner.
So JCVD immediately starts thinking of an escape plan, which involves a montage that is just far too long.
Hey, we get to see him do a split.
Yeah,
he works for, you know, he gets the obligatory JCVD.
I have to say that bathtub scene was like the hottest sex scene I've seen.
That scene was Boy Next Door. Weird. Yeah, like it's just a weird montage of like. And it just,
he puts a calendar on his wall so you can tell that time is passing.
Right.
And he does, he's just getting stronger because up to this point he's like on crutches. So he's like doing like kung fu moves in his room and stretching and stuff. But there's a scene where he's, he like, well, he's also like holding his breath underwater, just seeing how long he can hold his breath.
Yeah.
And then he takes the bathtub, which is filled with water, and he starts lifting it. But it's like, it's not just like he lifts it a couple times and then cut to the next thing. It's like 30, maybe 45 solid seconds of him like lifting this thing, like, and it's like, yeah. It's like shots of his face where he looks like he's banging the bathtub. It's like it was the funniest scene that I made. Maybe the funniest scene I've seen in this podcast.
He's been lonely on that island for a couple of months. Like, don't you judge him.
I have to think like, that the cinematographer knew it's going to be funny if I shoot it this way.
Like, this scene made me want to buy this movie. If I ever see this movie and get the $5 bin, I will buy it for that scene.
Hilarious. I loved the way... I'm hoping that Jean-Claude Van Damme was like, I want to do this, put this in the movie. And the cinematographer was like, I'm going to shoot this in the funniest way possible. The most embarrassing way possible. So he's been there for 4 months,
They kind of casually mentioned that because his wife later on is like, yeah, it's been 4 months since my husband died. I was like, oh, I thought it was still like the first week, but I wasn't paying attention to that calendar on the wall.
That's right. And so then we get one other scene with them in the think tank where they're looking at security footage from something, and JCVD sees a message from Starvos to him, like spray painted on a wall.
Yeah.
Which I guess none of the other agents see.
Well, they wouldn't, they probably saw, but they wouldn't have known what it meant.
I guess that's true.
I have your, and then it's a drawing of a butterfly that looks just like the tattoo that Jean-Claude Van Damme's wife has.
And yeah.
He
drew on his calendar too.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's
so he convinces them that he's like, oh no, this isn't Stavros, it's just a copycat. Like, he's trying to divert their attention away from it, I guess.
And with some great Jean-Claude Van Damme acting where he doesn't just say like, no, this isn't Stavros. He's like, it's a copycat. To the point where I wish every other secret agent just turned him and like, are you
what?
Are you having a stroke? Like, what happened? Like, but they all buy it. And he goes back to his escape plan.
Yeah.
Which now, for the second time in my notes, and not the last time in my notes, I say, this is the craziest product placement I've ever seen.
I didn't even think about it. Yeah, it's a cocaine.
When Jean-Claude Van Damme builds a Rube Goldberg contraption using a Coke can, and you don't even know at this point what it's being used for, but I'm like, this is insane. You know, like, and even the label, like the way they turn the label, I'm like, this is nuts. And I'm like, okay, all right, so he's making a Rube Goldberg contraption with a Coke can. Great. Which we then see is he cuts off his thumbprint.
Like, yeah.
The skin. And he attaches it to like an eraser, which is attached to the Coke can.
So that after so much water pours out or into the Coke can, it'll tip over, hit the scanner. Because whenever the plane arrives, you've got 5 minutes to get back to your cabin. So instead of just, I don't know, taking the eraser and like taping it to the thing, he's like, no, it must be, I need some sort of timing device to, so that at the last possible second.
Yeah, that's true. He could have just done it.
No, could have just taped it there. Would have been no. And we should mention too that earlier Belloc had told him.
He probably thought of that like on his way down to the ocean, like,
I made this so much more complicated than it needed to be. Belloc had told him, each one of the agents on an island has another agent who is secretly
his guardian,
where that if something goes wrong or if they manage to escape, they're going to be they're supposed to be monitoring them, and
they're in charge of catching him and killing them.
So Jean-Claude Van Damme jumps off a cliff. He's in the water. He has a whole thing set up to attach himself with grappling hooks to what I'm guessing is basically the colony's dumpster that that a plane is going to like take away. And out of nowhere, a guy in scuba gear just starts attacking Jean-Claude Van Damme, who again, unfazed. Jean-Claude Van Damme is like,
he fought bison. All right. What does a guy in scuba gear have to do with him?
That's true. And he but I'm like, wait, who is this guy in scuba gear?
I think it's that guy who punched him earlier.
Yeah. So I'm like, so the guy who punched him was his guardian and knew that this was the
day? No, I don't think he was the guardian.
No, I know he wasn't the guardian, which is what makes this
I assumed you, as soon as they mentioned Guardians, I'm like, oh, it's going to be the guy that punched him.
The guy
that
punched him. Because otherwise, I'm like, wait a second. That dude, like, we'll just call him that big guy. I think he had an eye patch, right? Or did he not have an eye patch? No, or something. But that big guy, or squinty. He was, like, very squinty looking. And so he's not in his cabin either, but he was just cool. We find it later. He is not Jean-Claude Van Damme's Guardian. So he was just like, I'm just going to get scuba gear and hang out of
the side. I wanted to see his contraption to...
Yeah, why didn't Jean-Claude Van Damme
just... He was smart. Like,
he just used the tape.
Well, there's a taper right there, right?
Why didn't Jean-Claude Van Damme just say, like, I would like to borrow some scuba gear so I can hang out near that net, please? Like, which is apparently all that other guy did.
All right, nothing suspicious there. Here you go.
He seems to have had no authority to be there or anything, or, like, I don't...
That's why I didn't think it was him, because I thought it was just, like, they had scuba... You know, like guards or something during these operations, just in case someone got in the water. But now I'm thinking about it, I'm pretty sure it was him.
I think I'm pretty sure it was him. Because then also, when the lasers do get to this is where I don't even know why I'm trying to make sense of this. Because when the lasers get turned back on, that guy's like, oh no. And then he explodes, which is not how lasers work. Lasers do not.
If any of you listening to this are confused by how we're describing it, just watch it. It's not going to be any more clear. It's not going to make any more sense.
Because I really love to think about that. If Cody, if right now we bisected you with lasers, you would not blow up in flames. Not. I mean, I don't think your blood is gasoline. You know, I don't know.
Mexican food for lunch today. So I don't know.
That's true. So now Jean-Claude Van Damme is hanging off the side of a plane. Like this cargo plane as they're pulling.
This is another James Bond scene, by the way.
This is
from I can't remember which one it was. Oh, it was one of the Dalton ones. It was the first of Living Daylights.
Yes.
It was basically the same scene. He's like hanging out the back of the cargo thing with on the cargo, and then they're
bringing it in.
Yeah.
Although I don't think even the Living Daylights, which is not my, it's not terrible.
I think there's scuba fights in a Dalton one too, actually, and maybe License to Kill. There's scuba fights.
It could be. So he gets, they finally kind of pull in. Again, this is just like a giant garbage bag.
Yeah.
And a guy sees Jean-Claude Van Damme. He's like, hey, Jean-Claude Van Damme very helpfully asks him, do you have a parachute? I think the guy said yes.
He's like, yes.
And Jean-Claude Van Damme throws him out of the plane. He then proceeds to throw like a bunch of other guys out of the plane. They do not get asked if they have parachutes.
Just assume they're all wearing
that one guy did, I guess they all do. Oh my god.
I did love it. Do you have a parachute?
Did you? I mean, it was such a.
I thought he was going to be like, give me your parachute.
I did too, or I would have loved if that guy was like, no. Like, what a twist that would have been for this whole plan. So he escapes the island, and Belloc, his watch starts going off, and we realize that Belloc was. Jean-Claude Van Damme's guardian, which I guess is not really surprising, but...
That's what I figured it was.
Yeah, raises a whole bunch of other questions about the other dude, but we're like, oh, okay. Because like, I was like, I feel like Belloc should be in more of this movie. Spoiler, he really will not be in much more of this movie.
He doesn't show up until like the last five minutes of this story.
It's unnecessary. And completely unnecessary.
Yeah. There's like, we have to bring that colony back.
Like, he shows up and it's like, it's all...
And now Dennis Rodman is back in the movie because Jean-Claude Van Damme's like, I need some supplies. And Rodman's like, do you have any money? Jean-Claude Van Damme's like, no, I don't.
I have a parachute.
So they then go from, for reasons that, there are multiple times in the remainder of this movie where there's no reason Dennis Rodman should be teaming up with Jean-Claude Van Damme. No, there's no reason at all. All Jean-Claude Van Damme has done is kick him in the face and ask him for guns that he won't pay for. And Rodman keeps going along with this.
Because he likes the trouble, he says.
That is the reason the movie gives, but it's like, that that doesn't make any sense. Right. Like, because the Rodman character also goes from being like, no, I'm not helping you. Mm-hmm. Nothing changes. And then like two lines of dialogue later, the Rodman character's like, I'm in.
It's the charm and charisma of Jean-Claude Van Damme.
That is, you know what? I will say this. He is looking good in this movie. He's a handsome man.
He's a handsome man, but
yeah.
All the personality of...
Oh, yeah. Of the parachute, I guess. The door I'm looking at right now. Yeah. So, and this is another scene that I really need explained to me. So there now Rodman, by the way, Jean-Claude Van Damme asks Rodman if he can fly a plane. And Rodman's like, oh yeah, like a bird.
Now, birds don't fly planes, though.
Birds do not fly planes.
I would like to point out, they have wings.
I'd like to point out, too, that he wasn't flying that plane.
They cut to a plane. Rodman is not flying it.
Someone else flying.
Okay.
Well, so actually, you meant me. No, not me.
So actually, wait. He can fly a plane like a bird.
That's true, yeah.
But yeah, so I'll have someone else do it.
Same piloting abilities of a bird. So they're in this plane, and I was very unclear as to what was happening in the plane.
They're arguing about the parachute. For some reason, a parachute isn't good enough.
No.
They have to use the special parachute ball thing that Rodman has designed.
A canvas hamster ball.
So basically, they're just arguing about it, where he's like, are you sure this works? And he's like, yeah, it works. He's like, are you sure? He's like, yeah, totally, yeah, it works. And he's like, you're sure?
I invented it.
I know. Like, literally, like, 2 minutes of that.
Right. And then, so then JCVD pushes Rodman out of the plane.
For some reason.
And then JCVD...
Who's not wearing a parachute.
Who's not wearing a parachute. Yeah,
He also did not get asked the question.
Wait, that other guy was wearing a parachute. So yeah.
Isn't everyone in a plane wearing a parachute? Like, that's not how these work.
So JCVD dives after him, and then they're falling to the earth, and it turns out that Rodman's contraption, which they don't seem to activate until they're like 30 feet from the ground. Is just an inflatable basketball that they are inside.
Yes.
Another, which if somebody producing this movie thought that was going to get a laugh, they were very wrong.
Well, can I point out that that is also from a Bond movie?
Is that really?
Well, I think it was probably like the same year actually. Because it's World's Not Enough, where he has like the jacket that he pulls the thing and it like big ball encapsulates him. When the avalanche happens, he uses it to like save himself from the
avalanche.
I think it might be like the same year, so I'm sure they didn't take it from that. But this is a lot of Bond.
Because JCVD, we're basically, our understanding is JCVD was like, I wasn't sure I believed you that your parachute would work. But how would throwing Rodman out of the plane? If the parachute didn't work,
it still wasn't going to work.
Right. Like nothing was going to make it work. You know, like you could have insisted on a test run, but yeah. I mean, other than that, I'm like, okay. So Rodman or JCVD,
I love the shot of him like too, like tangled up in the parachute ball. It was not a cool moment.
Yeah. No. No,
he's trying to get out of it.
That I have to think that someone in the prop department got chewed out that day by at least one of the actors. So immediately JCVD is to Rodman like, I will catch you later. I've got to go find out what's going on at my house and my pool.
Oh my god, that seems insane.
So he goes. This scene is really, really nutty.
Yeah,
he goes to his South of France house. And he's like creeping around the windows, and there's a woman in there with a baby, and he then goes inside the house,
yeah,
and the baby is a doll, and there's a bomb,
yes,
in there, and I'm like, this is impossible that they could have, they never could have timed this, mm-hmm. And there's a timer ticking down, so. Who could have possibly set this timer to know that Jean-Claude Van Damme was going to come across the baby at that second?
The screenwriter.
I get right.
That's all I got.
Exactly.
This explosion too. Not just how ridiculous it was, but the stunt. Like I was curious, like to see if something went wrong because he jumps away from the explosion, but he totally gets like engulfed in flames.
Oh yeah.
Like it's not like the rest of the movie. He jumps away from the explosion just in time. Like this whole room explodes and he's like. In the middle of it.
He's still in the room, basically. Yeah.
Which doesn't affect him at all. He's fine physically. But then, the explosion, though, like, once he gets out of the house, the whole house just, like, I mean, it's like a massive explosion.
Yeah. And then there's gunmen everywhere. And the lady who's with the baby is, everyone's just shooting at Van Damme. Van Damme uses Rodman's laser sighting gun to shoot these guys, which they really wanted to show off that laser sight. I was trying to think about that. I'm like, was laser sighting that like interesting in 97? It doesn't feel like it would have, but... and then he reluctantly shoots the like woman because she's going to throw a grenade at him, but the grenade does go into the pool and empty out the pool pretty much.
Well, I mean, it blows up and literally there's like
flames,
four like up. Gasoline barrels blew up.
Yes.
There's just flames everywhere. It's like a massive
explosion. I do it in my notes. I'm like, why did JCBD have a pool full of gasoline?
That's basically what it looked like. So then he comes upon a car like in the driveway or something, and there's like a tape loop playing where it's like, oh, I have your wife, your baby's going to be born tomorrow. And
for days, someone's had to go out there every day, change the batteries.
And come to this hotel. This is where you can find her.
In Rome,
yes.
I think. Okay, we're all right.
And then Rodman comes back in. He like saved. There's like an extra henchman that was going
to
shoot him, but he saved.
There was a henchman who seemed to be taking a nap, and a henchman who was like,
he's the guy who was in charge of watching the car and making sure the tape.
He's listening. Like, I got to make sure he listens to the tape, then I'll kill him. Yeah. You know, but he just was like chilling there for the whole time.
That doesn't make any sense. If Stavros was like setting him up to come find him.
Yeah.
Why are all his people trying to kill him?
And why was this guy like, I'm just gonna, you know what? I'm not going to pop up right now because that's what he'd expect me to do. I'm going to just sit here for a little bit and then...
And then surprise Rodman.
It surprised me. So Rodman knocks him out and...
He basically says, I'm sticking with you because you owe me money.
Yes, because you owe me money, which I'm like, yeah.
I'm protecting my investment.
Well, because they give us three different reasons why Rodman is helping him, none of which add up. One is that Rodman likes trouble.
Yes.
Two is that Rodman's like, well, you do owe me money. Mm-hmm. And the third one is Rodman's like, oh, I didn't know he kidnapped your kid. Okay. Right. So, but like each time it's like, no, this is the reason that this partnership is coming together that has no logical basis whatsoever. Right. I wish they had just even stuck with one.
Yeah. I just thought of another thing too is like, what is Stavros' plan? Like, because he seemed to want Jack Quinn to come out of retirement for some reason. But then I assume the only reason he's like kidnapping his wife and his kid is because his kid was killed. So he's getting personal revenge.
Well, there is a line later on. Well, we'll get to it.
Which didn't happen until he already came out of retirement.
Well, that's true. You know I mean? Actually, that's no.
So did he have some bigger plan that he just gave up on and never said anything about?
Well, I think the kidnapping of Jack Quinn's kid.
I think this is a poorly made movie.
Yeah. Wait a minute. This movie doesn't end up.
Stop this movie.
Yeah. I think coming up, they sort of reference why Stavros kidnapped his kid.
Maybe did. But, I just assumed that it was like, oh, you got my kid killed, so I'm taking yours.
But it doesn't really make sense for why Stavros was like psyched that Jack Quinn was back in the game. That never.
I felt like there's a bigger plan that was a part of that just kind of got dropped.
I may be, yeah.
But anyways, so they go to Rome.
Yes. To hang out outside this hotel for the most obnoxious and obvious spy work. Ever seen in a spy movie where everyone is just like a spy. Yeah. Like everyone
in that square. Everyone, the Van Damme's wearing the most ridiculous disguise.
I will say, this scene had the most redeeming thing in this whole movie. A man wearing a cape, riding a horse while shooting a machine gun.
Yes. Yes. And to make it even more wonderful, I was like, I have no idea who that guy is with.
Oh, no.
I don't know if he's which. I don't even know
just how just some many. Local in it for himself.
Yeah. So
just, he's waiting for this moment. An excuse to ride my horse and shoot my gun while I'm wearing a cape. Hot damn.
Yeah, and just mow people down.
And again, this is the other scene where you don't know who's with who.
No idea.
Because Van Damme and Rodman are like sitting in this square here and Van Damme is dressed like a hippie. Like, he's disguised as like a hippie. He's got like this weird wig and these weird glasses. And
when you say weird, I mean it's like dollar store Halloween costume. Totally like wig. Yeah.
Yeah. And so they're like waiting for, their whole plan was to somehow trick Stavros into leading them to his wife. I still don't know what the plan, like how that was going to work, but he sees his wife in a car.
Yeah.
And Rodman realizes, like, no, this is a trap. He's trying to draw you out. Yeah. But he doesn't care. He just, like, starts running at her, like, yelling, Catherine, Catherine. And the car pulls away. And then he runs into Stavros.
Yes.
And that's when all his guys are like, oh, Stavros here. Get him, get him, get him.
And everyone's just like, ah, bullets.
I feel like they just started shooting each other. Like, Stavros maybe didn't have any guys, and they're just shooting at each other.
And at some point in here, they all become kind of fascinated of, again, as Nick said, there's a guy on a horse wearing a cape with a machine gun just mowing people down. And there's everyone shooting everyone, but everyone, Jack Quinn starts being like, sniper on the roof. And everyone becomes fascinated with this sniper to the point where, Jack Quinn stops following Stavros, and everyone's just like, hey, what about that sniper? Like, that guy. That's who we all need to be, like, getting
into. That's true. Yeah, because then he runs into the hotel or whatever. Yeah, the hotel. To find the sniper.
To find the sniper. He's like, Stavros, I'll be back for you. You have my kid, but I really got to talk to this sniper. Like, I've had a bad history with snipers.
So then there's some, like, kung fu fight between him and the sniper.
The most impractical knife fight.
Oh my God. Yeah. I forgot about that. That was the dumbest.
So
I felt that was another Bond one with the knife in the shoe. But
for whatever reason, he's holding a knife between his toes and kicking at it.
It's the craziest reveal too. It's like his foot comes out, he's like looking at his foot for a second, then like a knife pops out.
I could write a book about the cutaways of Van Damme's face in this scene. There's so many cutaways where they're just like, okay, Jean-Claude, give us one where you look curious. Give us one where you're like, oh, what's that? Give us one where you look down at a foot, and they just cut to like a bunch of these weird shots of him. Yeah. And it is just an insane kung fu fight that
just for the sake of having one at that moment.
Yeah. Really. I think they just thought, they're like, we haven't had a real kung, it's a Jean-Claude Van Damme movie that hasn't had a real martial arts fight. We need to have one in here. Somewhere.
It was weird. It kind of took you out of the story of him trying to find his wife, and all of a sudden he was just fighting these two guys.
Because we'd never seen either of these two guys. Neither one had even been established as a Stavros sidekick, or something. Like, it felt actually like a Bond henchman fight, but if we were meeting the henchman for the first time during the fight.
So he kills both these guys, and then he hears sirens, so he escapes.
Yeah.
And where does it go from there?
I think this is where we meet the cyber monk secret agents. Well, because I got very confused because he's looking for some kind of information about a prescription.
Because before Stavros leaves his hotel room, he peels the prescription label off of one of Catherine, I think her name is, one of her pill bottles, and like puts it in the mirror.
Yeah.
So he finds it. Van Damme finds it, and then is trying to find like what doctor prescribed it or something.
Yeah, you have better eyes than I do because I missed that. In fact, it was the comment section on IMDb. Someone who gave this film 10 out of 10 was like, they have a little bit of an issue with this.
I only caught it because when he puts it up on the mirror, it's like it was a pointed moment where I'm like, what's he doing? He just like stuck something to a mirror. I'm like, why did he just do that? And then he saw it and it came around in my head. I realized it. But the prescription is just like her name and like the pill, like what medication it is. And so they go to like this monk monastery, like underground place.
Yeah, because earlier Dennis Rodman mentions that he has a brother that can help him. Yeah.
Right.
And it turns out, like Franciscan brothers cyber monks. They're all working on this mainframe of.
I was waiting for that
information.
I was waiting for that classic joke they always make too, when a black guy says, "I have a brother," and I thought Van Damme was gonna be like a brother, or like a street brother, because they always do that dumb. They didn't do it to their credit. They did not do that
to their credit. The one '90s movie that had restraint on that joke.
I thought that this scene was kind of funny though. That like the monks underground who are like fist bumping and stuff. This is so goofy. It was funny.
Yeah, this scene, this is maybe the one scene in the movie where kind of this weird comic action vibe kind of came together. Like the whole movie, this scene seemed to know what it was. Like they were like, it was self-aware enough of like, we get it, you know?
Yeah, so they're like searching for the prescription. And basically like, these are all the doctors in the city who have prescribed this medication in the past week or whatever. There's like this whole list. It's like, how are we going to narrow it down? And then like a name just like pops up on the screen and the guy's like, where did that come from? Like they didn't search it or whatever.
And it was help from the colony.
Yeah. Van Damme's like, wait a minute. Let me,
they haven't
let
touched me on in half an hour at this point.
It's just like, oh, we need these guys again, so let's...
So the colony sent him this message, and Jack kind of sends a message back to the colony. So at this point, I'm like, so the colony is cool?
Well, the colony did say that...
they wanted to see him win.
They don't like Starvros. Yeah. But... Well, we'll get back to this. We'll get back to the confusing nature of what the colony is going for. And so now JCVD and Rodman are going through tunnels underneath Rome. We get a terrible basketball pun of Rodman throwing a skull at a detonator, and he misses it. And JCVD's like, you need more practice. And Rodman's like, oh, I hate practice. And meanwhile, I'm like, in a fetal position on the floor being like, stop.
End the movie.
Yeah. So now Starvros tells some guy, he's like, hey, go in and kill the mom and the nurse who's taking care of the mom. Like JCVD's wife.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm like,
okay. The whole thing. Yeah, she's had the baby at this point.
Yeah, and she's had the baby.
This whole thing was weird. Like,
it looked like it was an abandoned hospital.
Yeah, I think all hospitals in the movie are abandoned.
That's the second hospital we've seen that was the abandoned hospital.
But I think you're led to believe that the dealer who called her was actually working with Stavros, and he like got her through this whole like thing where he was buying her art. And I don't know if she ever knew she was being, like, she was actually, like,
I don't know kidnapped. If she ever knew she was kidnapped. Like, the Wikipedia page, it's like, she is kidnapped by Starvros. Yeah. And I'm like, I'm not sure she knew
that. I don't think she does, because she's just, like, chilling out in his room, and then she starts going in labor, so he brings her to this hospital.
Yeah.
And that's where Van Damme finds her.
But this guy goes in. First, Starvros sends this guy, Mickey Rourke mumbles to him to kill the lady and the nurse. And so the guy goes in, he's about to kill Jean-Claude Van Damme's wife, and the nurse busts out a gun and kills this guy. Yeah. And I'm like, who is this nurse? Cut out of this movie that did not give this nurse any setup at all for this moment? I mean, like, it's a twist in the movie that feels completely unearned.
Yeah, it was weird.
I did not understand that. Why did she have a gun? Like, what situation was this nurse who's taking care of a lady who just gave birth? She was like, oh, I better pack some heat. I don't know.
Because I think
kids are unruly these days.
Well, and it was an abandoned hospital. It did look like a bad neighborhood.
I assumed she was working with Stavros, too.
Right.
So maybe all of his people are carrying, but I don't know why the killer wouldn't
take
that into account.
I don't know or why. It did something about that. There had to have been something cut out that made that.
So Van Damme comes in and he sees his wife and
he's ready to kill this nurse. And the wife's like, no, she's a secret friend. Don't worry. And by the way, the wife instantly 100% on board that JCVD is alive. In her mind, he's been dead for 5-6 months at this point. She is never as a moment of hesitation of like, oh, yeah, okay, certainly. I just gave birth to a kid, and my husband's alive, and my nurse just shot a guy. Yeah, sure.
You marry an international secret agent, you just kind of roll with the punches.
I'm sure this is the first time this has happened.
Yeah, exactly. I knew this is how this was going to go.
Were you at the colony again, Jack?
Okay. Yeah, exactly. Back. Well, and by the way, you know who's back in the movie? My favorite character. The tiger. The tiger's back.
So the nurse says, for some reason, the nurse knows where Stavros is with the baby.
Yeah.
He's chatty as all hell.
Yeah. Yep. So I guess it's the Colosseum.
Yes.
And Van Damme and Rodman show up at the Colosseum. Rodman is supposed to stay behind with the wife.
He
says, immediately leave
them. Yeah.
So in theory, by the way, I did think in the second movie, I'm like, no one was with JCVD's wife who just gave birth.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
There's a nurse there.
Hopefully,
the nurse is dead.
Hopefully the nurse didn't shoot
shoot anybody else.
But, so Van Damme like walks into the Colosseum, and Stavros is there standing in the middle of the arena and with no shirt and the baby.
Yeah.
And he basically says like, This is important.
I think this is what the movie is trying to say. At this very late point in the movie, we get Stavros' motivation. He's like, okay, well, Jack Quinn, if you live through this, you get your son back.
Right.
If you die, I'm going to raise your son. It's basically like winner takes son.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's where I got confused. Is like, does he? At some points in the movie, I thought he wanted to kill the kid, like to get revenge. And then other points, is like he wanted to raise his own because his kid was dead. Like I didn't.
I think this doesn't make any sense. But I think what the movie is positing is he wants his son was killed, which he blames Jack Quinn on.
Right.
And then he's like, oh, Jack Quinn has a son. I want a competition for him for who gets to raise this kid. Who gets
to be a dad.
Yeah. You know, winner gets to be a dad. Yeah. Loser dies.
So he's got the whole, like, the arena, like, rigged with mines. And he's basically said, we're going to fight. And, he doesn't plan on fighting. Maybe he planned on it, but he's not going to fight Stavros. He's going to fight the tiger.
Right. He's going to fight the tiger. Yeah.
Which was when that happened, I was like you. I was like, oh my god, the tiger is back.
The tiger's back. And now.
So wait, we've got Chekhov's baby and Chekhov's tiger.
Yeah, Chekhov's tiger.
So, but he tells Van Damme, like, watch out for the mines. But then, like, the tiger might just step on a mine as soon as he, like, walks out of the thing.
Yeah,
like,
oh, I didn't understand either. Because
it's a mine sniffing
tiger. Not, yeah, like, it's not like Mickey Rourke said to the tiger, like, hey, watch out for those mines, yeah, tiger.
Right.
You know, but now Rodman comes busting.
And by the way,
in.
The way these mines are set up, obviously, when one blows up, the entire building blows
oh,
up.
Oh, the whole
you find
thing
that out in
go.
A few minutes.
Yeah. So now Rodman comes busting in on a motorcycle and, like, kind of grabs the baby.
Mm-hmm.
And Rodman's been busting around on the motorcycle for a while when Van Damme's like, hey, watch out for mines.
Well, okay, so I don't know if you guys noticed this, but I watched it, like, 4 times in a row.
Yeah.
When
you poor bastard.
When, well, yeah. No, this one line, because when Van Damme yells, the crosses are mines, if you watch his mouth, he's obviously saying the crosses are mimes with an M.
God.
I watch it like 4 times. Like, he's saying the crosses are mimes.
They're stuck in an invisible box.
Trapped in invisible boxes.
It's filled with mimes. Watch out.
Yeah.
So Rodman, yeah, he busts in on the motorcycle, saves the baby, and, like, rides around the mines, then leaves.
Then leaves, just rides around with the baby for a while, and tucks a newborn baby into just a hole in the wall, and it's like, I'll be back later. Yeah. Where I'm like, this is just terrible work.
At the same time, you see Belloc, like, skulking around the
Belloc
the
is back.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's hanging around. And
yeah.
I'm like, okay. So now Jean-Claude Van Damme and Mickey Rourke are free to fight. And there's a sequence where Mickey Rourke gets, like, kicked in the face, like, 10 times. Mm. I mean, like, one, like, I mean, just edited together. Like, it's like Rocky IV-esque of, like, the amount of, like, this is unrelenting.
Yeah.
Like, no one's face can handle that much impact. What,
did you see Mickey Rourke's face in this
true.
Movie?
Actually, this might explain a lot of late 90s and early 2000s Mickey Rourke. This film was a documentary of what happened to him. So how does this work out? Both Van Damme and
Mickey... Rodman comes back.
Yeah,
he's got no shirt on now for some reason. He took his shirt off for this fight.
Which oh, it's going to be that funny. Kind of fun.
Yeah.
All right.
It's yeah. Like, I got to take my shirt off. So he comes back and he starts...
Immediately steps on
yeah,
a mine.
Yeah, before he can do anything, he steps on a mine.
That's right.
And so he's like, he can't move. And he somehow rigs the mine in a second so that it doesn't explode when he steps off of it.
Yeah.
As Van Damme and Stavros are still fighting in the background.
Okay.
So then...
Apparently, while this is going on, while Stavros and JCVD are fighting... Dennis Rodman rearranges the crosses
yeah,
that are...
When that was revealed later, I was like, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, because you...
Yeah.
Whatever, we're closer to the end of the movie, I guess.
Sure. Yeah.
You see...
roll credits.
You see Van Damme step next to one of the crosses, and Mickey Rourke's all like, oh, you stepped on a mine. You're screwed now. And then he, like, steps on a mine himself, but there's, like, no cross next to it. And that's when, like, Rodman's, like, sitting in the sand behind him. He's holding cross. He's like, I rearranged some of your crosses. It was like, okay. So,
which seems like that would not have helped. Like, there's no way to know that would have helped JCVD.
Because JCVD didn't know this.
Yeah.
And really, all of this is incredibly moot because we find out, like, 2 minutes later that when one of these mines goes off.
The entire building.
The whole Colosseum comes down. They're like thermonuclear mines.
Yes. Yes.
Better hope there's a Coke machine around.
Yes.
Yeah.
So they find out that JCVD's mine is not a real mine. And that means that Mickey
Rourke's his mind is in fact a mime.
A mime.
It's a mime.
It's a mime.
That's what he meant. He was trying to tell him.
I am going to mime a mime.
There you go.
So Rodman and JCVD go running out, and we have one of my favorite sequences in like what a blocking and like logistical nightmare it is. If they just are running through the tunnels, JCB is like, "Where's my son?" And Rodman's like, "I don't know. I'm looking.
He's around here somewhere."
Belloc,
it's a big building.
Belloc just pops out and he's like, "Hey, I've got him." This is nuts. No one.
I really got one more day of shooting left. Yeah. We need to get just. Step out of the shadows.
If you watch this movie again, watch it for the look on JCVD's face when Belloc steps out. He is, again, unfazed. Oh, that guy from the colony is here holding my newborn son. Sure.
Must be Tuesday.
Yeah. This is, yup. I got it. So now they're running through, because now, as Nick said, like this, the entire Coliseum is blowing up.
Mickey Rourke, instead of getting eaten by a tiger, decides to step off the mine, and he blows himself up, and I think blows up all the other mines and the entire building. But there's a shot of them like running down a hallway, and there's like an army of Coke machines.
Oh yeah, it's like 10 Coke machines.
It's like in a dark like corridor. There's all these like glowing red Coke machines.
It's not even like a modern section of the Coliseum. I mean, it's like
I don't know what they're plugged into. I don't know what.
Yeah. And
so the explosion comes down the corridor and it like lifts these Coke machines and it like blows these Coke machines like towards the screen so you can see like all these Coke machines coming at you.
Yes.
All these big Coke logos. And then they get behind one.
Rodman, Belloc, JCVD, and the newborn baby get behind a Coke machine. Yes.
Basically a precursor to the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull hiding in the fridge sequence.
Yes. Yes. And then the explosion ends and everyone's like, "Everybody good?" Yup.
We're all okay.
This is not since Mac and Me have we seen such a life-saving soda.
That's true. Coke should really sponsor us.
They really... As soon as I saw that, I don't even have a note about it. I'm like, I can't believe that that they went for this that Coke went for this and that everyone was like, sure. Okay.
So then they get out there just... walk out of the Coliseum, and there's a car sitting there. I don't know if it's Belloc's car or whose car it was, but...
Yeah, there's actually two cars sitting there.
Oh, right, because he speeds away. Yeah.
Yeah, and what happens next, I believe, is open for the audience to interpret on their own.
I did believe that Belloc just kind of, okay, saved you and the baby. Hey, just so I remember this, give me some of your hair and a piece of your shirt. I'm about to kill you because that's what I got to do.
I wasn't sure if he was going to kill him and just wanted the hair and the shirt for a souvenir, or if he was going to take the hair and the shirt and be like, "Oh, look, I killed him. I took it and let him live."
Obviously, he must be dead. I have his hair and his shirt.
Because then, couldn't he just take his hair and his shirt after he's dead?
I thought that was what was happening too.
But then Belloc is pointing a gun at him.
So I'm like, if this is fake.
But then when he gets away, he's all like okay with it.
You know? Yeah, Belloc. Because then what happens is Dennis Rodman throws this coin, which we didn't know was a smoke bomb, but is a smoke bomb. And JCVD's like, gotta go. Like gets in a car and peels out. And then Belloc and Dennis Rodman are totally cool.
They share
and they're just like, ha ha ha. That was zany. Yeah.
See you in the sequel.
So I think Belloc was just like, no, dude, just give me a lock of your hair and the shirt so I can say I killed you. Yeah, but JCVD's like,
at the same time, though, the colony can see everything pretty much.
That's true.
So it's, again, I think this might be a poorly thought out movie.
I feel like they did.
I've got the sneaking suspicion
that they wanted just, to.
I'm starting to come around here.
Yeah, that they may not have. Well,
it seems crazy at first. I know, but it's.
I do want to do, before we do our So Wrong It's Right, I do want to give two very interesting reviews. The LA Times gave this film a positive review and enjoyed it. Roger Ebert gave this film 2 out of 4 stars, which is shocking. I actually read Roger Ebert's review.
Not to be crass, but was this when Roger Ebert was still drinking?
The review is pretty nuts. I mean, I think, and maybe this speaks a little bit to the time, of Roger Ebert seemed more on board with. I think he was able to view this as just like a bananas crazy movie.
Yeah, if you watch like that.
I guess. It seems
like... Because there's points in this movie where I felt like, is this supposed to be like a comedy? Like, is this supposed to be funny?
There were definitely points where I was like, okay, it's going for something funny. And if you look on IMDb, it classifies it as action sci-fi comedy.
Yeah. Well, and I was going to do a Loved It review, but most of the Loved It reviews were just people who were like, this movie's so crazy. Like, you know, none of them, there weren't any.
I saw one last night that gave it like a 7 out of 10, and it was like, this movie's not for everyone.
Yeah.
Right.
You probably won't like it, but I liked it.
Yeah. Yeah.
There were some plot holes, but I liked it. I'll give it a 7 out of 10.
So here is our So Wrong It's Right question. The original screenplay writer, this screenplay was purchased by Mandalay Entertainment for $1.5 million, the original screenplay.
I just realized that their logo is a tiger. And there's a...
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Which is why, that is believed to be why the tiger is in so much of this movie. Which $1.5
million... Has it been million, an MGM movie?
Oh, lion. $1.5 million in 97 actually was a reasonably... That's a fairly expensive script by mid-90s standards. So here's the question. The screenwriter, after the movie came out, did an interview with Variety. What percentage of his original script remains in the film that we saw? It was reworked. What percentage?
I'll say 20%.
I'm guessing like 10. I'm guessing maybe the colony stuff.
Was the whole movie basically the colony? That would be interesting.
Clocked in and telling Variety... Zero. Not one line of dialogue from his script remains. He said he did not believe 8 words he wrote made it into the completed film.
Man, we both lost by Price is Right rules.
The title of his original script, The Colony. I believe the original script was completely centered.
See, that would be interesting.
Yes.
It seems like it was just two movies that got jammed together after shooting both of the movies. Like,
yes.
And the colony stuff really didn't have anything like, actually, to do with anything.
It could be. That could explain some of the ADR. Yeah.
I think that's what... Because the colony stuff actually seemed somewhat thought out and like
it seemed like a totally separate movie.
Totally. Yeah.
Not just like, oh, that's a weird shift, but completely separate.
Yeah. And when the colony stuff first came in, I thought, like, okay, this is gonna be like this group of like, you know, secret assassins that they're gonna send out on, you know, a team of secret thought to be dead assassins doing these missions or whatever, and
right,
and it was like, oh no, they can't even leave the island.
I basically watched a bulk of this movie at the gym yesterday morning. I was like, this doesn't look that, you know what, I'll watch this while I do my cardio. And I stopped dead on the elliptical. I'm like, when the colony shows up, I'm like, what? There was no indication there was going to be some kind of sci-fi twist. Or it's just what the? For a moment, I honestly thought like it jumped to another JCVD movie or something.
Yes.
And they said, oh, okay. Well, no, it's the same character. What the?
I think this original script had to have been some kind of modern reboot of The Prisoner, that, you know, and I will go as far as to say, I actually, for longer than I should have last night, tried to find that original script, like in like the online script databases, unsuccessfully, because it made me think, I wouldn't be shocked if it's an interesting movie.
Yeah.
I mean, it may have also been really goofy. The whole lasers, if the lasers in the water thing was a part of the original script, then I might still have a problem with it. But yeah, he basically was like, nope, nothing is left from script I wrote. So, good times.
times, anyways.
Yeah, this one, this is right up there with...
I enjoyed it. I would say it's so bad it's good.
Do think this is so... I really would almost highly recommend this for the laugh quotient.
I'm the odd man out then. I was just like, this was just too dumb. It didn't even have consistent internal logic or anything. It just kind of...
Let me ask you this. Did the runner of the Coke can, the Coca-Cola product appearances, like, isn't there a value that by the time of that third, the really Coke, when you see the Coke machines lined up, I mean, Tell me that wasn't a payoff of some.
I think without that the first, was funny. Without the first one, it wouldn't have been.
But the hour and 20 minutes spent leading up to that.
That's true. Yeah, the Coke. I would say the Coca-Cola company has the best arc in the movie. From being a foil to JCVD to helping JCVD escape.
It's
the
a full redemption.
Saving everyone's lives.
It's true. The hero here is Coke.
Yeah, Coke. Yeah. It is. It is on Crackle right now. Crackle.com for free. And I think it's been up on Crackle for a while.
Actually, when I went to go watch like the last 20 minutes last night, it said there were only like 7 days left. So by the time this goes up, it might be gone.
It's probably gone by the end of the
month. I think this movie's not too hard to find, though. I can't imagine this is...
Next time you're at Walmart, look in the $3 DVD bin. You will find plenty of it.
And I'm not making any promises for when this will happen, but somewhere down the road, the JCVD movie I really want us to do is Sudden Death, the JCVD hockey movie. I really down the road want us to do that one. It's so crazy, and it is, and it takes itself fairly seriously, which makes it even funnier. And that was also made at like peak JCVD, you know, time frame. But went into development when he was at his peak, but came out when he was on his decline, which are the best ones for our purposes.
Does he co-star with a superstar hockey player?
Well, actually, you know who's in it? Powers Booth is in it. If you enjoy Powers Booth, yeah,
I do like Powers Booth,
and it does involve JCVD trying to prevent a terrorist incident and from an arena from blowing up. And playing goalie in an NHL hockey game. It's awesome. So hopefully we'll have that at some point coming up. And I can't tease. I'll say this. I think there's a DC Universe movie that's out on home video that I'm pretty sure will be coming up pretty soon on this podcast. You can do your own math at home.
Yeah. I think superhero movies. So.
Yeah, I know which one you're talking about.
It'll be on there. And like I said, we appreciate everyone who tunes in. We are in Cody's beautiful new home right now. I will be starting my new job in a week. Hopefully, things will be settling down, and we will be back on track.
Nicer weather is ahead.
That's true, actually. Yeah. And we're coming out of winter, which was a surprising problem for scheduling and a lot of things. I think it's good. Anything else you guys want to add on this total trash fire of a movie? No?
Yeah, nothing else, I don't think.
Perfect. Nope. All right, we will be back soon with more bad movies, and we will see you then. All right, bye.